Well, I hope you were able to be a part of at least some of the last few Sunday nights that we've had here throughout August. Our choir and our orchestra did just a fantastic job as we had some great times of worship. We had This Hope and Overflow, and then last week we had the Metro Big Band. But I'm just especially grateful for our choir and our orchestra and all the work that they put into it under Mark and Bill's leadership. So I hope you're able to be a part of that. And we appreciate what they do to just help us worship in a healthy and good way. And so we do appreciate all that they do. Well, they say that everybody has their moment. Maybe it's a moment of greatness. Some people do rise to that. Maybe it's a moment of inspiration. Maybe you're one who sometimes you get that moment of inspiration and you've written a song or you've written a poem or you've just had that inspired moment. Or maybe, and I guess we'd have to check with the ladies in the room this morning or here this morning, and maybe some of us men have really kind of gotten inspired and had a romantic moment. And, you know, we're able to hit that time where we really were able to show our wives that we truly were romantic. Or maybe, and this is an old one, you remember Kodak moments? For some of you who are young, I'll let your parents or your grandparents explain that to you, but that used to be a whole advertising campaign. There are no Kodak moments anymore because everything is a Kodak moment now because kids are snapping pictures of every little second of their lives. You know, after church this morning, My girls will go with a lot of other kids over to what they call the PGL, the Popular Grass Location. How many of y'all have ever heard of the Popular Grass Location here at Pleasant Valley South Baptist Church? All right, there's a few of us. If you've got a teenage daughter, you know where it is. I'll tell you where it is. If you'll go out by the dumpster after church, there'll be a whole bunch of people out there taking pictures. So if you've ever wanted your picture taken by a dumpster, go to the PGL, okay? And it's out there behind the Family Life Center, and there'll be a lot of people taking pictures. And of course, we know about the good old senior moment. How many of y'all have ever had a senior moment? Like, nobody wants to admit it. Come on now. We've all had senior moments, haven't we? You know, that time where you know the person's name. It's right there on the tip of your tongue, but you just can't get it out. You just, you know, we've all had those senior moments. Now, you understand that a lot can happen in a moment, don't you? And for, what is a moment? A moment can be anywhere from a period of a few seconds to a period of a few minutes. And momentous things can happen in a moment. Momentous things, something that's momentous is something that happens now and it has far-reaching implications. It happens in this moment of time, but the consequences or the results or the effect sometimes is felt immediately, sometimes not felt till later, but it's crucial. It's a decisive moment. It has far-reaching impact. And momentous things can happen in the span of a moment. You might experience in the moment or in a moment a great triumph. If you've ever been part of a sports team and you won a championship, and you know that in the span of just really a short amount of time when you consider your life, you experienced a momentous thing. It's something that made a difference right then. It's something that you look back on and you're proud of. You're like, man, I was part of something. I was part of a triumph. You can experience a great pleasure in a moment. We also know, though, that you can experience unspeakable tragedy in a moment. You can experience a loss in a moment's time that impacts and colors and affects the rest of your life. But as great as a moment can be, or as low as a moment can be, aren't you thankful that your life is not defined by any one moment that you've ever had? Aren't you grateful for that? But the truth is that there are some who sit among us this morning who would say, you know, my life is defined by a moment. Their whole understanding, their whole concept of who they are is defined by a moment in time somewhere in their past where they made a decision, they entered a relationship, they did something that marked them, and they are still carrying the effects and the weight of that today. And sometimes that's years and years ago that happened. And so in a moment, their life was marked. And they now live their lives thinking, if only I had, or if only I hadn't. Have you ever had one of those moments? Do you have some of those experiences in your life where you look back and go, boy, if only I hadn't done that? Or, and this is really humbling, if only I had listened to, if only I'd listened to my mother or my father, if I'd only listened to my youth pastor, if I'd only listened to my Sunday school teacher, if I'd only listened to my teacher, I wouldn't be living under this cloud because of that moment, what I did years ago. And the truth is that if your life is defined by a moment, it probably was your worst moment. It was probably your worst moment. But here's good news. We were not made for moments. We were made for eternity. God never intended for our lives to be controlled and defined by the past or simply by the here and now. God never intended for your life to be controlled by simply the here and now. And that's what I want us to think about this morning. We're going to look at a personality in the Bible who, if I asked you, I said, tell me something, tell me what you know about this man's story, you would go to this moment that we're going to read about here in just a second. We're going to talk about Esau this morning. So in our text this morning is going to be Genesis chapter 25. Genesis chapter 25. I think I put on the text that we're going to read verses 27 through 34. But I'm actually going to back up a little bit and begin in verse 24 and read down through verse 34. All right, so we're going to Genesis chapter 25, verses 24 through 34. Now, you know the story. Isaac is whose son? Abraham, right? Okay. And so I'm sorry about, yes, Isaac is Abraham's son. And then Isaac marries Rebekah. And Rebekah is barren. She can't have children. And then, of course, Isaac prays that his wife will be able to have children. And the Lord blesses her, and she's able to. And the Lord actually comes and speaks to her, because she's the you know, she has twins, and they were wrestling within her womb. There was, you know, they were kind of duking it out in her womb. You know, there was strife, there was turmoil there, and the Lord speaks to her and says, there are two peoples, there are two nations that are going to come from these two children, and the older is going to serve the younger. And that's where we pick it up in verse 24. It says, when the time came for her to give birth, there were twin boys in her womb. The first to come out was red, and his whole body was like a hairy garment. So they named him Esau. After this, his brother came out with his hand grasping Esau's heel, so he was named Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when Rebekah gave birth to them. The boys grew up, and Esau became a skillful hunter, a man of the open country, while Jacob was content to stay at home among the tents. Isaac, who had a taste for wild game, loved Esau, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Once when Jacob was cooking some stew, Esau came in from the open country famished. And he said to Jacob, quick, let me have some of that red stew. I'm famished. That is why he was called Edom. Jacob replied, first, sell me your birthright. And Esau said, look, I'm about to die. What good is the birthright to me? I'm starving. What good is that to me? I'm about to die. But Jacob said, swear to me first. So he, Esau, swore an oath to him, selling his birthright to Jacob. Then Jacob gave Esau some bread and some lentil stew. He ate and drank and then got up and left. So Esau despised his birthright. So let's talk about Esau. Here's the facts of Esau's life. He was the firstborn son of Isaac and Rebekah. He was the twin brother of Jacob. His name is similar to the Hebrew word for hairy. Now, we just read that when he was born, he was red and he was hairy. Now, most babies are cute. I got a feeling he wasn't anything to look at. I got a feeling if you saw Rebekah pushing him down the street in the stroller, you would look in there and go, ooh, you know, oh. I mean, he sounds like the kind of guy who, I was thinking about this as, you know, college football just started. I think he could have been Georgia's mascot, you know, Harry Dog, without wearing the costume. I mean, he just was, that just doesn't sound good. And You know he was really hairy because, for those of you who know the story, you know that later on, the way that he got the birthright, or that Jacob got the birthright, was Jacob and his mother got together and they sort of conspired against Isaac. And Isaac had gotten old and he was blind and he couldn't see. He was so blind he couldn't even tell the difference between his own two sons. And so Jacob and Rebekah got together and said, here's what we're going to do so that you can get your father's blessing. And you remember what she did? She said, I want you to cook up some stew, cook up a meal. And I want you to take it into your dad, but so that he will think that you are Esau, we know he's blind. What did she do? She put animal skin on his hands. Because she thought, well, you know, now he's going to know this isn't Esau because he's going to hear Jacob in that little high-pitched, whiny voice he has. And he's going to know that it's not Esau. So how can we get around that? And so she puts animal skin on his hands. And sure enough, when Isaac goes and he says, well, man, you know, he's saying he's Esau, but this sounds like Jacob. He says, here's how I'll know. Stick out your hand, son, and let me feel it. And so Jacob sticks his hand out, and he's got that animal skin on, and Isaac rubs it and goes, that's old Harry. You know, that's Esau. And so that's how hairy he was. And they called him, with that reddish complexion, they called him Edom, which means red. And they also called him that because he wanted some of this red stew. And so his nickname was Red. Esau was a man's man. He was a daddy's boy. He was the one who loved the outdoors. He loved to go hunting and fishing. He loved to kill something and drag it home. And so he was just a rough, rugged, man's man kind of guy. Jacob was a mama's boy. He wanted to stay home and cook, and you know, I don't know what he did in those days, but it said he liked to hang around the tents. He liked to stay home. And so Jacob was a mama's boy. Now, Esau was the oldest. You know that that means that he had a lot of privileges that Jacob didn't have because he was younger. And what it was is it centered around the birthright, and it carried a lot of advantages. It carried a lot of material advantages. You read the Old Testament and you see very quickly that the oldest always inherited a double portion of what his father or the parents were leaving behind. And so Esau, as the oldest, stood to inherit a fortune. Now, the reason for this was, is because as the oldest, you had the greater responsibility. Like when dad died, you would get a double portion of the inheritance because you were expected to take care of mom and the rest of the family. And so it was a great position of prominence. It gave him leadership and headship over the family when Isaac eventually passed away. But not only that, it carried a lot of spiritual privileges, the spiritual advantages, in that he would be seen, Esau would be seen when he became the patriarch as sort of the priest of the family. And so he would be seen as the spiritual leader of the family. And this was a very, very important position. But not only that, think about the unique situation of Esau and Jacob. They were in the lineage of Abraham. And so, you remember the promise that God had made to Abraham. And so the promise would pass from Abraham to Isaac, and it would pass from Isaac. And if things went the way culturally it should have, it would have passed to Esau because he was the oldest. But it didn't work out that way. It didn't work out that way because what happened was Esau had a day where all he was living for was the moment. He was just living for the moment. Esau had been out hunting, came in one day, and his brother Jacob was cooking some stew. You know what hunters do. They get up early in the morning, they go sit in a tree stand. I don't know if he was sitting in a tree stand, but we'll just say he was. He's been up probably since long before dawn out hunting and probably had a long day, and maybe he was frustrated. He didn't kill anything that day. And so he comes in and Jacob is cooking some soup. And Esau says, hey, brother, give me some of that stew. I'm hungry. I want to eat. And Jacob says, let's make a little deal. Tell you what, if you'll sell me your birthright, I'll give you some of this stew. Now, any person with any common sense knowing what they had coming in the future, would say, "You're crazy. I'm not selling you my birthright for a bowl of soup." But here's what Esau did. He got so just caught up in the moment, so just living for that moment, he makes the worst decision of his life, and it's the decision all of us remember him for. He says, "I don't care about my birthright. I'm starving to death here, Jacob. Give me something to eat. I don't care about that stupid birthright. You can have it." And here's what Esau was doing. And teenagers, I want you to listen up, okay? Esau failed to see that now always shows up later. Now always shows up later. Teenagers, what you do on Friday night now is coloring who you'll be 10 years from now. The relationships you get in now will color every relationship you have for the rest of your life. If we were all to get real honest here this morning, there would be many of us who could say, "You know, there's a now that I have that's a part of my history years ago, and I'm still living under the crushing weight of it today." And for some of you, that's 40 or 50 years. Now, there's hope, and we're going to get to that, okay? You see, teenagers, what the great fallacy you live under, the great fallacy you live under is, what I do now isn't going to matter 10 years from now. But I promise you, every decision you make, every relationship you get into, every time you say, "Well, this isn't going to matter," I'm telling you, it's going to matter. And you, if you're not careful, you will be one of those people who looks back on your life 20 and 30 years ago and said, "Boy, if only I had not done that. If I'd have just listened when I heard that." Because I'm telling you, now always shows up later. And for Esau, it did. You see, as human beings, we're always going, "Well, you know, yeah, I can do this. I can make this decision because, you know, it really won't matter. It won't matter when. I'm only 15 years old. This won't matter when I'm 35. I'm only 14 years old. This won't matter when I'm married and I have kids. This won't matter." Yes, it will. Because it is shaping you. It is forming you. It is coloring your attitudes. It is changing your heart. Because in those nows, something gets imprinted on your heart and your mind, and it stays with you the rest of your life. There's hope. We're going to get there, okay? But just understand, now matters. Because now always shows up in your later. You see, this birthright, Esau said, "Well, the birthright ain't going to put any food in my stomach now. I don't care about the birthright." I'm convinced that what he was thinking was, he was thinking he could just agree to anything with Jacob, and that then, you know, he could turn around later on and say, "Well, I take that back," or "I was just kidding," or we didn't shake on that," or something like that. But no, it cost him his birthright, because all he was interested in was now. He allowed the urgency of now to govern his response. You see, we live in a very individualistic society. In an individualistic society, all you're doing is you're going from one now to the next now because you're looking for the next experience. And we see this lived out all around us. And we're told constantly, you just gotta live in the moment. You gotta carpe diem. You gotta seize the day. We must live for now. And people are always talking about the power of now and being in the moment and living in the moment and just now and now and now. But now can become a tyrant, because now demands to be satisfied now. And because you want to be satisfied now, you might completely sell your future down the river. You might completely ruin any chance you have of realizing your hopes and your dreams. And the reason we know this is because we know there are people who have lived that kind of life. What are you willing to trade for the things you want now? What are you willing to potentially give up? See, you don't even really know what you would be giving up, but what are you willing to give up? Because you just wanted something now. And you didn't want to listen to anybody now. Because you thought, this isn't really going to matter. This is just going to stay here. A lot of lives have been ruined in pursuit of now. Now is a cruel master that'll leave you burdened and crushed under a load of debt or guilt or regret or broken dreams or a broken heart and lost opportunities. You see, the truth is that time is one of the greatest tyrants any of us could ever know. Because the other side of this is, remember what Jesus said. Jesus said, hey, listen, don't worry about tomorrow. Just live this day. Don't go out there and bring tomorrow's problems into today. And so sometimes, you know, we even as Christians just get into that. Well, hey, let's just live for the moment. Let's just live in the moment. And in a sense, you have to do that. But here we have an example of somebody who totally dismissed tomorrow and was just about now. No, I'm just hungry. I don't care about tomorrow. I don't care about the birthright. Daddy's not going to die anytime soon anyway. Why should I worry about that? And see, that's the beautiful thing about the Bible. That's the beautiful thing about a Christian worldview is that there's balance. There's part of the Christian worldview that says, yeah, don't worry about tomorrow. But there's another part of the Christian worldview that says, but don't just live for today. You got to have them both. You've got to have them both. Because the Bible teaches both. We always hear, don't wait, act now. This offer won't last long. How many of you have ever bought something because somebody said, you know, if you'll buy it now, we'll take $5 off? And for $5, you got something that's sitting in your closet and you haven't brought it out in 15 years. But you saved $5 because you acted now. Those decisions never work out, do they? They never work out. When we make choices and decisions in haste, we usually pay a heavy price later. Now is not all there is to your life. If you're just living for now, if you're just living for the moment, if you're just living for today, your philosophy of life is just to be in the moment, seize the moment, then you can only live by your feelings, moods, and desires. You can only live by your feelings, moods, and desires, and those are things that can change as quickly and frequently as the direction of the wind or the weather. Your feelings, moods, and desires. If you're living by feelings, moods, and desires, you never know when you'll give away everything that matters in your life for a bowl of soup. Teenagers, I hate to be picking on you, but see, you live by your feelings, moods, and desires. Because when mom or dad tells you to do something, what do you always say? I don't feel like it. That's what you say, isn't it? I don't feel like it. And you're waiting on a better mood, or you're waiting on a different desire. See, your brain is not developed enough to overrule your feelings, moods, and desires. And the truth of the matter is that those of us who are beyond 25, when your brain is fully wired up, we still struggle with living simply by our feelings, moods, and desires. It's a condition of the human heart. But when you live by your feelings, moods, and desires, you never know what you're going to do. And I can tell you, your feelings, moods, and desires can be easily manipulated. You know how I know? Drive down the road, past Krispy Kreme. Now, you've just gotten off work, or you've just come from the gym. you just finished running 5 miles. And you drive by Krispy Kreme and the hot donut sign is on. And what does it say? Krispy Kreme donuts hot now. And you go, that sounds like a pretty good idea. And so you whip it in there, and then 5 minutes, you've got a dozen donuts, and you carry them home, and you give them to your family, and you say, I'm just going to eat one. So what? You see, your feeling, mood, and desire was, man, I just finished exercising. I just had a great day at work. I'm going to go home and, you know, just share this with my family. But your feeling, your mood, your desire was changed. Why? Because you saw a neon sign that said, there are hot donuts in here right now, and you need to have one. I heard a pastor preaching on another subject, being he's in Manhattan in New York City. If any of you have ever heard of Timothy Keller at Redeemer Presbyterian Church, if you don't listen to him, man, you need to listen to Timothy Keller preach. But he was talking about there's a diner in Manhattan, and the name of it is simply Eat Here Now. Eat Here Now. I mean, what better? There's nothing better than that, is there? We've got something good. You come and get it now. Hey, Christians, we know the Bible teaches us there's an enemy, right? Let me tell you where the enemy lurks. Let me tell you where the enemy is hiding right now. He's hiding in your feelings, moods, and desires. And anytime the wind shifts direction, even just the slightest in your life, he will jump all over it. He is hiding in your feelings, moods, and desires. He's lurking in now. He's lurking in now. Always is, always has been. You must live in the moment. You must live in the now. You can't do anything else. But you were never meant to live for now. Never. You see, when you became a Christian, it altered the way you look at life and time. It altered. It should have. Because that's what it means to be a Christian. So you were never meant to live for now. Not even the good nows. Let me share something else with you. Don't bother turning there. I've got it printed out in big letters so that I can read it. Matthew chapter 17. This is the account of the Transfiguration. This is an interesting passage. Listen to what it says. After 6 days, Jesus took with him Peter, James, and John, the brother of James, and led them up a high mountain by themselves. There he was transfigured before them. His face shone like the sun. His clothes became white as the light. Just then there appeared before them Moses and Elijah talking with Jesus. Do you understand what a big deal this was? I mean, here are Peter, James, and John, and they're with Jesus up on this mountain, and all of a sudden, Moses and Elijah, the law and the prophets, show up. Like in the flesh, you know, where you could see them, where you could talk to them, where you could hear. And they're over there talking with Jesus, carrying on casual conversation. And Peter, James, and John are over here just wide-eyed. I mean, this is big. This is like some Christian saying, you know, I was having my quiet time the other day, and Jesus and Peter and Paul showed up in my room. That's how big this was. Jesus and Moses and Elijah. Verse 4, Peter said to Jesus, Lord, it is... He says exactly what we do. We would. Lord, it is good to be here. Lord, this is great. Man, this is just an awesome moment. If you wish, as a matter of fact, Lord, I will put up 3 shelters. One for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah. While he was still speaking, a bright cloud covered them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son whom I love. With him I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell face down to the ground, terrified. But Jesus came and touched them. "Get up," he said, "don't be afraid." When they looked up, they saw no one except Jesus. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus instructed them, "Don't tell anyone what you have seen," and don't miss this, "until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." Man, don't you know that last statement just crushed Peter, James, and John, because they were going, man, this is going to be so cool. you know, we're going to go down this mountain and we're going to tell our friends, these other disciples, these other apostles, man, y'all, it was so neat. We were standing there and Elijah and Moses dropped in and they're just over there having a conversation with Jesus. And it was awesome. It was just such a great moment. It was such a great moment. As a matter of fact, Peter's saying, Lord, we just need to, hey, let's just build camp here and let's just stay here. Because this is such a great moment. And what does Jesus say? He says, Peter, as great as this moment is, it was not meant for us just to live here. Now think about this. If Jesus had said, yeah, Peter, that's a good idea. Let's just build some houses here and let's just stay here. I tell you what, we'll just get Elijah and Moses and, you know, the six of us, we'll just stay here. We'll just stay in this moment because it's so great. And it would have been great. And it was great. But what would Peter, James, and John and everybody else had missed if Jesus had said, yeah, it's all about this moment? He refers to it. He says, don't tell anybody until you've seen something bigger than this. See, because there was something bigger coming. There was a resurrection. He said, now, when you see that, then you tell them about this. Because your life is about more than just this moment. You see, your life is about more than just any moment that you've ever had. No matter how high or how low you might be, here's the hope. When you embrace the gospel of Jesus Christ, when you embrace the gospel and you let that work into your heart, and you let that begin to be worked out in your life and lived out in your life, all of a sudden, that moment that you say, wow, that marked me, and I have been living under that cloud, I've been living under that guilt, I've been living under that regret, I've been living under that for so many years, what will set you free is the gospel in your life. Because there is freedom and there is hope in the gospel. Always hope. Now is not all you have, because in Christ, when you embrace the gospel of Christ, you have forever. You have forever. When you embrace that gospel. And the truth is, there are many people. Perhaps there are people sitting in one of these buildings on this campus today who are living lives that are defined by a moment. Because if I sat down and talked with you one-on-one and you shared your heart, you would say, and when I was 21 years old, here's what I did. When I was 18 years old, here's the decision I made. And you know what? I can't get over it. It has come to define me. It completely colors how I look at myself. But I want you to know, it doesn't have to be that way for you. It does not have to be that way for you. Because when Jesus died on the cross, it says He covered your past, He covered your sins, when you open your life and your heart to Him. And you don't have to be defined by a moment anymore, because you're not just marking time. You see, the people who are defined by a moment, all they're doing is they're marking time until they die. Let me tell you something, Christians. We're not just marking time until we die. We are living in preparation for eternity. And so your life is not driven by a calendar. Your life's not driven by a clock. Your life is fueled by the eternal hope and promise and love of a risen Savior. See, that's freedom. There is hope. You can breathe under that. You cannot breathe when you're just living for now. It will suffocate you emotionally, relationally. It will. Why live for the moment? Why live for the now? When God says, I have given you eternity. If you're sitting here today and you say, I'm that person, I'm that guy, I'm that lady, defined by a moment, we invite you to embrace the freedom that comes through the gospel of Jesus Christ. We invite you to come up for air. Because I promise you, when you accept Jesus and you begin to live for Him, you begin to allow His Spirit to live in you and through you, that now that defines you from so long ago, I'm not saying it'll disappear, but it will gradually begin to fade away because you will have a new identity. And so we invite you, in just a moment when we stand for our invitation, to come and receive that gospel, or, you know, just to say, Lord, I don't want this burden anymore. I don't want to be defined by that now. I want to live for eternity. Maybe there are some who just looking for a church home, and this is where you've decided you need to place yourself and your family. I'm going to pray in just a moment, and then Mark's going to come and lead over here. Wes and Eric will be in the front in the Family Life Center. And if you're looking for a church home and you want to join with us, we invite you to do that. If you've made a decision for Christ, you need to be baptized, we invite you to do that. Or maybe you just need to stand right where you are, make up your mind that when you go home today, you're just going to talk to God and you're going to say, God, I don't want to be defined by my now anymore. In Christ, I want forever. Let's pray together.